You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Last week, we brought you a conversation that centered around the question, what can white people do about racism in America? Today, we continue exploring that question with Robin DiAngelo. She's a former professor, a consultant, and author of the book, What Does It Mean to Be White? Developing White Racial Literacy. And she's with us now. Robin, welcome to Stateside.
Oh, thank you so much.
You've been doing racism workshops for years. You're in Grand Rapids today, actually, talking with white people about racism. Briefly, what is your message to them?
That none of us are exempt from the forces of conditioning that surround us. And that as long as we think of racism as a simple formula of individual conscious dislike that only mean bad people hold, we will never be able to challenge racism.
And what kind of responses do you typically get as you present this message?
Well, one thing that I have going for me is several hours. And everything that I do has been vetted for years and years and years. I know my people well. I like to say that white progressives are my specialty because I am a white progressive. And when I say that, I mean any white person who sees themselves as against racism, open-minded, etc. And so I just start with a basic understanding of socialization and then scaffold it to the harder issues or messages, right? So, for example, any white person who says, I was taught to treat everyone the same, doesn't understand socialization, doesn't understand the forces of culture, and to be really blunt, is not particularly self-aware. So you have to have people understand that that's not actually possible or even desirable, right? Because people have different needs and there's different power dynamics going on in our interactions.
When people hear you say that, what kind of response do you get, especially initially? Like you say, you have hours with them, but what are those early responses like?
Probably the first 2 to 3 minutes, they are out of their comfort zone, but they often are not able to necessarily articulate why. And that is because I don't grant white people individuality. And a lot of, even if you get angry calls after this interview, that's probably what got triggered for people. We have a very precious ideology, you know, that we're all unique individuals, and how could you possibly know anything about me just because I'm white? Well, as a sociologist, I'm quite comfortable articulating shared collective patterns because they're observable and they're real. Right. So I keep a pretty tight rein on the room until I've laid down that foundation. If I kind of open that room up really early on, I'm going to get a lot of resistance and a lot of defensiveness. But if people can just sit tight, you know, until I've explained what I mean, they're usually with me.
So we know that there are white people in this country who are clearly racist. We saw them marching openly last month in Charlottesville, for instance. What if someone who says, Robin, I disavow these hate groups. I believe in equal opportunity for everyone. And years ago, my grandparents or my parents settled somewhere, let's say in rural Michigan, and I didn't grow up around minorities because of where we live. But why am I being told that I'm racist? I'm just trying to get by and take care of my family and do the right thing.
Well, there's so much in what you just said. So actually, growing up in segregation, which most white people do, and this is segregation, it's not a fluke or an accident. It's segregation that is the result of decades of policies and practices. There's a reason their small town in wherever they grew up is primarily white. And it's not just because people prefer to live with their own, right? For as long as we've had segregation, we've had people of color trying to integrate, and it's been blocked. But if you don't have relationships with people of color, you are left to gain your understanding from the most problematic sources: television, movies, jokes, omissions. And so they have absorbed very, very deeply problematic racist messages with no actual humanity to put to the face of people of color because they don't have relationships. So that has not exempted them either. And as long as we think about racism, again, as these extreme acts, those people that marched in Charlottesville are what I would call avowed card-carrying racists. I am not an avowed card-carrying racist, but I'm very clear as a result of being born and raised into a culture in which racism is deeply structured, that I have a racist worldview. I have a deep racial bias. I have developed racial patterns, racist patterns, and I have an investment in a system that serves me so well. I try to point the finger inward rather than outward, just use mm-hmm. myself as an example so people can relate to what I'm saying, but I'm, you know, not necessarily feel like I'm pointing at them.
When we talk about behaviors that contribute to the problem of racism, what are people unconsciously doing that is contributing to the problem?
Apathy. I mean, white people, I'm sorry, but after years and years and years of working with white people directly on racism, most white people are very apathetic about racial injustice. You show me Rodney King being beaten on TV and I'm going to be appalled. But that there's vast inequity in schools, well, as long as my kid has the best, you know, I'm sorry about that. And in fact, I'm going to work hard to make sure there's inequality in schools because it serves my children, right? And I think what it looks like in a white progressive is apathy, incredible defensiveness, arrogance, certitude that we are so, you know, informed on something that we actually are not informed on, an inability to listen, a deep lack of humility, and honestly, not really many relationships across race. You know, this kind of seeps out of our pores, right? The nature of an assumption is you don't know you're making it. So I'm probably not going to check my own assumptions. But if you try to check one of my assumptions, I'll probably get extremely defensive because, again, as long as I define racism as conscious dislike that only mean people have, I'm going to defend and deflect my lack of it.
Robin, as you go through, as you say, you have hours with people when you do these workshops. Give us an idea of the most constructive ways to help white people understand race relations and white racial identity in our country in 2017.
I think of it not as an either or. You know, I was taught to think of it as an either or, but I think of it as a continuum. And maybe those people who marched in Charlottesville are in the really far end of the continuum, but I'm on that continuum. And I don't get to be further along than they are just because I say that I am. That has to be demonstrated through authentic, sustained, and accountable cross-racial relationships, and also breaking silence and white solidarity with other white people. And I would just start with know thyself. Recognize that our work will never be done. I will not be free of my racist conditioning in my lifetime. And every moment I push against it, it's coming right back at me. And so I can never be complacent. And so combining that ongoing self-knowledge with building relationships, you know, getting racism on the table in our workplaces, keeping it on the table when everybody wants it off the table, you know, looking at our policies, etc. There's so much good information out there today on what white people can do about racism. I respond to that question in two ways. And the first thing is I put this back onto white people. I have them consider, what about my life has allowed me to be a full, professional, educated adult and not know what to do about racism? How have I managed to not know? And that's a sincere question. Sit down and start to map out how you have managed not to know the answer to that question. And there is your map. A second thing is to break with the apathy of whiteness and go find out. Take the initiative. Research it the way you would if a doctor just diagnosed you with some horrible sounding illness that you had no idea what it was, right? You would do everything you could to learn about that because you saw your life as dependent on it. It's that kind of motivation. And the default of our society is the reproduction of racial inequality. It does it beautifully. I think we all know that. Our schools are incredibly efficient at reproducing racial inequality, and so is every other institution, right? Those systems depend on nothing more than white people being really nice. Just be really nice. Smile at your coworkers. Go to lunch on occasion with your black friend, and then carry on. And you will uphold this system because niceness is not courageous. Niceness will not interrupt racism. It won't get it on the table when everyone wants it off the table. And in fact, naming racism is often seen as not particularly nice. So it depends on intentional, strategic action that's rooted in accountable relationships across race.
Robin DiAngelo is a educator, a consultant, and her book is What Does It Mean to Be White? Developing White Racial Literacy. Robin, thanks for spending time with us today on Stateside while you're visiting Michigan.
Oh, you are so welcome. Thanks for the opportunity.